Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 301, recorded August 9th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello.
Well, we've got episode 301 for you, so who's going to be there?
We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, Mick in the one and only Carnforth, UK, and Tom in Evesham, UK.
And we have a few things of our own.
Yes, just little bits and bobs.
So let's just cover that first.
We could have a whole segment named Bits and Bobs. Or Flotsam and Jetsam.
Oh, I like that.
I might have to sing Little Mermaid songs, though, for that one. I don't know.
I really like that, Flotsam and Jetsam. It kind of works.
Okay, should we do ours first?
Yes.
Okay, we went to Fish for You again today, which was the local fish store when we lived in Salt Lake that we really liked, that we don't get to go to very much anymore since we're about 45 minutes away from it now. But we were down there today and we had time. So we went in and they had some cute little gobies in a marine tank that were each paired up with a shrimp, and they were doing their whole shrimp and goby routine.
Which I believe we've talked about on the podcast before.
It was very cute. So the shrimp was working on their home and the goby was keeping guard. And we kept trying to get a video of it for you guys. But the goby did its job. They both did their job so well that the shrimp kept disappearing back into the hole. And all we got on the film was the goby. Except for like 2 seconds at the beginning or something.
It was a very large marine tank and it had a number of goby shrimp pairings spread around. And they were all very small. Usually the ones I've seen in pet stores are larger.
But as soon as I would bring the camera up, or the phone up, you know, to film it, the shrimp would dart back in and the goby's like, "You want a piece of me?"
It was fun.
Yeah, so it was kind of fun to see. Also, the same pet store, which you put this up on the Facebook page,
Already.
Yeah. Already, so you can go see it. They had a couple little dollar bills folded into funny shapes, like a bow tie and one of those frogs where you push on it and it bounces. And they said they had another customer who came in and does real origami, and it was amazing. She made a koi out of a dollar bill. I don't know how many dollar bills, if it's more than one, but she even made it so like the swirls on the dollar bill turned out to be the eyes of the koi, and it has the whiskers and it's got scales.
It was fantastic.
It was amazing. It was a work of art. So
you have to see it.
Yeah, go look at the picture on the Facebook page.
It'll be on our show page, and it'll also be on the Facebook page, so either one, just check it out.
It was pretty amazing. And then you have a couple things you want to talk about.
Yeah, one is that I hatched out some beaver tail shrimp. It's a very large type of fairy shrimp that gets to be, you know, several inches. It can be like 2.5 inches long. And what is that? 2.5 inches long.
Bigger it's like, than a brine shrimp.
Yeah, it's like 5 centimeters or something. It's pretty long. So it's been fun to hatch those out. They grow extremely quickly, as many vernal pool organisms do. I hadn't really had a chance to work with this species. I had one aborted attempt, well, a failed attempt, I should say, a year or so ago. I hatched some, but they almost immediately died, and I sent a message to the seller, and he said, "Oh, I'll send you some free eggs." And so we did, and I hadn't had a chance to hatch them for a while, but I hatched these out, and they're doing great.
We have them out on our balcony.
We have them out on the balcony where they get a little afternoon sun and so on, and they're doing great. They're now in a 20-gallon tank because they quickly began to outgrow the 4 or so gallon tank I started them in because they get really big very quickly. So I will be releasing a video with some footage of them during the first week so you can watch the development. That's going to be coming out on Friday. And it's really fun to work with a new species. They're right now, I mean, within a week they were bigger than adult brine shrimp, and I'm not talking the small San Francisco Bay brine shrimp, I'm talking about the larger Great Salt Lake brine shrimp. Within a week they were bigger than that. And they're very interesting creatures. So that'll be fun.
Did you say that you put the video up yet?
It's scheduled to come out on Friday. I've already posted it, but it's not scheduled to come out until Friday. So if you are reading this or hearing this after Friday, you can go check it out right now. Okay, the next thing was the shell dweller tank that I've been talking about. It's set up. I mean, the tank itself is set up. The heating is, you know, I'm testing the heater. It seems to be stable. the lighting is up and everything, the substrate's in the tank, the filter's running, all of that's going. I haven't put any of the shells in or any of the other decor in, but other than that, it's set up, so I'm excited to see.
Just working on getting it cycled.
Yeah, I need to get it cycled, and I've ordered the fish. They'll be here in a few weeks after everything's cycled out, so pretty excited about that. Finally going to start a new species of fish.
You've been wanting to do
that for a while. Yeah, that's been on my bucket list, as Matt asked about a while ago. So I'm going to do it. All right, so let's dig into our contributions.
Okay, well, we'll go to Matt in Perth first. Then he says, "G'day, Russ and Kelly. Episode 299 had some audio issues that I want to point out. There was a wind chime or similar. Yeah, it must have been a wind chime because we did it in this room.
Yeah, and we probably didn't have the window completely closed.
Yep. Sorry. Making noise in the background for most of the episode. There was also a loud hum that I suspect was caused by a fridge or a filter equipment. I don't know what that one was because...
Do you hear one right now?
I know what it is.
What is it?
It's the attic fan.
Oh, it's above the attic fan. Oh, we're going to have to see what we can do about that.
We'll pick a different room.
Yeah, because they're probably picking that up right now.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, darn it. And it's automatic. It's on a thermostat.
Yeah.
So we need to figure that out. Maybe I can shut it off.
We'll do it in a different room. Most recording devices have headphone input, so you can plug in headphones to hear live what the recording sounds like.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if I can... Can you hear the hum?
I can hear the hum.
Okay.
I guess I'm probably just used to it because...
Yeah.
It's just ambient house noise. I didn't even think about it.
Oh, blast. So when it's warm, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Unless I can fix that.
Well,
I'll work on that.
Let's do it in a different room.
Yeah, yeah. And we can try that too.
He says, this would make such things obvious. During the podcast break, I could still hear the humming noise probably because it was... It's just playing through all of the breaks and stuff live, recording it on this app, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. I may be able to fix that, though.
Okay. Because I think that means the microphone was still recording during the break. I think that's just how this app works.
But I think I can fix that.
Okay. I think you said the new podcast software was an iPad app, meaning you are now using the iPad to record the audio. If that is the case, I'm not sure if you can listen live to your recordings using the iPad.
I can. I've got headphones right now.
Okay.
Giving me the live feed of the recording. And I think I can hear the hum through it, so that's a problem.
He says, I know some good microphones can connect to the iPad, although I do not know if your portable audio recorder has that option.
Unfortunately, it doesn't, but I may be able to pick up a piece of equipment that can link them. I'm hoping to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would help.
So, and he's got some other suggestions and stuff for us, so we can go through those, or we can go into the fish part.
Oh, let's go ahead.
Because we can just talk to Matt about that.
Let's go ahead.
Says, now on to my contribution to the episode. I have sent in an audio contribution, but I thought I would write out a written one, too. I prefer written contributions because I have to do 10 to 15 takes, usually, on an audio contribution. Particularly if it is a long one, I often mess something up at the end, and then have to do it all over again. Well, I tell you what, Matt, don't feel like it has to be perfect, because...
Because I just coughed.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I mess stuff up all the time. I feel like I butcher your guys' emails because I'm usually reading them cold. I haven't read them before. So please don't feel like it has to be perfect. It can contain hems and haws and ums and restarts, and that's okay. He says, I don't like hearing my audio contributions coming out of the iPad either. It just sounds bad being re-recorded, but hopefully your new app can fix this problem. The other advantage of a written contribution is you can take breaks when you want to. That's true. You can start writing an email and then get interrupted by, like, the phone ringing in the background, such as it is doing now. And then you can go back to your email. He says, that is not as easy with an audio contribution unless you are really skilled with the pause button. Here's my contribution. Hello, Rose and Kelly. I know I've already said this in audio form, but again, congratulations on your 300th episode of the podcast. You get no money for doing this, and it takes away time that you could be spending with your family. We, the listeners, know this, and all value your consistent effort to keep this podcast going. So,
well, thank you, Matt.
Yes, thank you.
We do appreciate hearing it again, actually, even though we've heard it once, we always appreciate it.
It says, my 180-liter marine aquarium has gone through another crisis. I seem to be noticing a pattern here, haha. Dory died from her ick, and took my two new Ocellaris clownfish and bicolor Blenny with her. Add to that, the bicolor angelfish has been doing a lot of damage to the corals. Turns out I did not get lucky and have an angelfish that was not eating away at my corals.
That's too bad.
I sold the bicolor angelfish back to Vebus. I don't know how you say it. my local fish store. The six-line wrasse was the only remaining fish after this ichthyostrophe. I recently bought 5 new blue-green chromis, and they look gorgeous. I think they do better in these larger schools, and so far they have shown no signs of ick. I waited about a month after the last ick death, as I knew that was roughly the amount of time it can survive without a host in the aquarium. Some of the remaining coral, however, look dreadful. The majority are doing well, but there are a few that I wonder if I should just remove from the aquarium. The only reason I have not is they still have a little bit of life in them. So my question is, how do you know when a plant or a coral is terminal? It is easy enough to spot dead plants and corals, but sometimes it is a little hard to know which ones will make a recovery.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd like to put that out there, because I have kept corals, but it's been a while and I have limited experience. Most of them were just, you know, soft corals. And so maybe there are some marine aquarists out there among you aquariumexers that can provide some insight there.
You could probably talk about plants, though.
Yeah. Plants, well, it's hard to quantify, though. I mean, you can look at a plant and say, oh, that's probably not going to make it, but how do you know? I don't know what it is, what qualities about it when you look at it. Hard to say. Plus,
maybe this is a little bit metaphysical, but it seems like you have to feel how much life is in it. It's not a formula.
It's
kind of like when you go to the grocery store and you're picking out apples, and you think, which of these apples feels like it has the most light in it, and therefore will taste the best and be the best for me? That is how I pick out fruit. People think I'm nuts, but it works.
She picks out pretty good fruit, gotta say.
I don't look at the skin. I look at how much light the apple is still emanating out into the universe.
I wonder, you know, that's a good thing to think about. Yeah, let's... and, you know, I kind of think I have some sort of intuition about plants when I'm doing it, too. You know, is that going to survive or not? And sometimes I've been surprised, but you never know. I think I have an idea. But let's put that out, aquarists. What do you think? What do you... use? What do you have anything quantifiable you can share, or is there something other that you use?
Okay, Matt goes on to say, Vebus has an octopus for sale right now in their aquariums. That's so cool! I want to keep an octopus at some point. I can't right now as I cannot make the correct environment for it, but wow, how cool would it be to own an octopus? I totally agree.
So do I.
That would be so cool. And
there's an airplane.
Sorry, Air Force Base strikes again. That one we have no control over.
Yeah,
can't we just live near that. The Air Force Base. Xander wants to have cuttlefish, our second son. He would really like to have cuttlefish.
He would love
the
cuttlefish tank, and whenever we go to the aquarium, he stands in front of the cuttlefish tank for a long time.
Yeah. As you guys know, I did some research into them at one point, and they aren't that hard to keep. All you need is a 200-liter, 52-gallon aquarium that has no escape holes for the octopus to go through. They like low lighting, strong rocks that they can't easily move, and a live fish once a day for food. They were feeding the one at Vebus a molly. However, the octopus was not into eating while I was there, and the molly just swam around the octopus's aquarium. They also need strong filtrations as they shed skin just like a lizard does. The only sad thing is they only live for a year or so. I'd need to keep replacing my octopus with a new one. Do you have any one day I'd love to own fish or reptiles? Do other listeners have ones they'd like to write in about? I think it's a great question.
It
you
is.
Kind of alluded to that earlier.
Yeah, I did.
With the shell dwellers.
Shell dwellers were
yet,
one of those. But yeah. I think he may have referred to that earlier. Maybe I was just thinking about this email when I read it before. But shell dwellers.
It is sad about they only live for a year. Like, just like rats. Rats are fabulous pets, but they only live, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, three
if you're
lucky.
Yeah, and there are plenty of reptiles that I would like to do that. Our son, one of our sons, our oldest, wants to get a tegu lizard. They're amazing.
Yes, although I had to tell him, because he's almost 17, so he'll be out of the house soon enough, that I said, I don't want a tegu, so maybe you should wait until you have a place so that when you move out and go to college, I'm not still taking care of a tegu.
Yeah. Oh, dwarf seahorses. We've probably said that before, but that's
And I know I'm
list.
Not allowed to have them, but I would still really love to have leafy sea dragons.
That's true.
In my fantasy fish tank.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can make a new
video
game.
And stingrays.
Fantasy fish tank. Yeah, and stingrays. I would love to have stingrays someday.
And, well, there's so many. Well, another reptile, blue-tongued skink.
You like those ones, huh?
I do. They're cool.
I'm not, like, the biggest skink fan in the world.
But you might
they
have to meet
like
a blue tongue.
Play.
No, blue tongues are cool. People I mean, let them pretty, out to play in their backyard, but, and then they when they want to come back in, they come and scratch at the door like a dog.
How big do they get?
Oh, a couple feet long, depending on the species and stuff. They're cool.
So if you guys want to send us your fishy bucket list, or reptile bucket list, or just pet bucket list, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what and why. Oh, here comes the airplane again. Some days they run a lot of drills, and some days they don't run any, and I don't know.
But you never know.
Yeah. It's just part of living here. The planted aquarium is doing well. I have tried to pull out most of the vallis, but I don't seem to be able to get all of it. It's not fun pulling it out, as the tank tends to get cloudy fast from soil debris. It's funny, with the corals and plants, I tend to pay more attention to them than the actual fish. I'm beginning to turn into a coral plant gardener more than a fish keeper. I love that I do not have discus in it anymore. It is so much more relaxing having easygoing fish. What was your most difficult fish to keep happy?
Yeah, that's part of the reason I'm setting up a shell dweller tank. Because I'm not going, I might put like some Anubias or something, maybe some cryptocorns in, but no demanding plants, because I wanted something that was easy, that can focus on the fish and not have to worry about the plants. I like plants, but I didn't want to have to focus on them. So there's that. Let's see. Fish that were difficult to keep happy. What did we have there? What have we got?
I don't know.
What have we had? I'm drawing a blank. I mean, keeping a bunch of betta tanks clean when we had baby bettas, that was tough.
That was labor intensive, just because there were so many containers.
Keeping puffer fish was a little challenging, because all the ones I had would only eat live food. That was tricky.
So you had to make sure they all ate and had live food on hand, which was harder to get in Hawaii.
Yeah, when we lived in Hawaii it was harder to get. Once we got back here it was easier, but I think dwarf puffers are one of the more challenging ones. I'll think about that, because I probably had some others that are a little challenging too.
I feel like on the whole you tend to gravitate towards picking easy fish.
I think that's true,
because we are so busy and you don't want to make a gigantic brouhaha.
Yeah,
you want fish, but you want it to be easy, so I feel like you kind of gravitate toward, you pick easier fish kind of on purpose. Not that you would be incapable of more difficult fish, but just it makes your life easier.
From a time investment standpoint, I think that's probably true most of the time,
Do we need to take a break?
Let's take a break.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com. Or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99.
All right, we're back.
Okay, let's go to Mick. He says, "Hi guys, I hope you are all recovered after what must have been a serious after-show party last week."
I guess it was 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Because we missed a week, we were on vacation,
staycation. We were so partied, we went to bed and we slept.
Yeah, I don't even remember what we did.
Well, then I went to Boise for a dance convention. I guess that wasn't exactly after-show.
No, it wasn't.
But it was fun.
It wasn't after the podcast either.
Okay.
But last week we had our staycation, so.
So that was good. Mick says, "I have taken a picture of my latest attempt at a breeding fry trap for live bears. I have experimented for a while with different versions, as the ones usually available are all far too small for swordtails and mollies and even many guppies."
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. "So I've taken the end of a large plastic water bottle and made a cone of mesh that sits underneath the opening when it is inverted in the tank. I'm going to install a small power filter that will have an outlet pointing into the open top of the water bottle. The idea being that the flow of water going through will take the fry out of the mesh and away from the trap. I will probably have a small clump of java moss or spawning mop in the corner of the tank to give the fry a sense of cover. This should keep the fry away from being eaten, and only the gravid female would be in the trap, so no other larger fish to eat the fry either." And he's got a picture here to kind of explain it.
Oh, yeah, I see what he means, yeah.
So, we'll put that up so you guys can see Mick's brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I can have tanks with groups in and just move the gravid females as they are looking ready to drop And he says, Fry, not dead.
And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. I will let you know how it goes and see if I can get a video of it up and running soon.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
He says, Russ and Kelly, the Cichlids, are doing well, and we're very flattered to be featured on the 300th show page. Just been doing some water changes and listening to your archived shows with Jim Carmark. Have you considered doing a follow-up interview with him?
We have. We were thinking of doing one on Stingrays, for example.
Yeah, we even talked to him about that, and then we just never got it.
Maybe we need to try to look into that.
Says, we will have to look at booking a date to do the crayfish thing sometime soon. Yes,
very
that would be
true.
Great, Mick.
Very true. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Mick.
Okay. And now we've got Tom in Evesham, UK. Says, please send my thanks to Mick for his advice in your 300th podcast. So, Mick, good job. Clearly, Mick has Nostradamus-like water parameter predicting powers, as my tap water is indeed slightly alkaline and very hard. And he says, GH 180 milligrams per liter. Maybe all is not lost for my new tank after all. I was away over the weekend, and when I returned, I noticed that one of the Varietus plates in my biorb had changed. He's got small, cloudy, white-silver patches under his gills and at the top of his head. His behavior hasn't really changed. It doesn't have the texture of cotton wool disease, at least that I can see, and there's no clearly defined spot that I would expect for white spot. I've taken a few pictures, not the best quality. Have you got any suggestions for what it might be, or am I worrying over nothing?
And then I asked him some follow-up questions, and the fish's behavior hadn't changed a whole lot, which is good. It was still eating and things like that. And then he sent another email.
He says, following my last email, the fish has developed a small white spot on the pale patch on the top of his head. Looks like it could be ick, so I'm going to dose the tank up with malachite free and warm the tank up.
Okay. That's a good idea, I think, especially with the ick. Now, I did mention this could be mycobacteriosis. It's not necessarily...
Which we hate.
It's an awful thing. The scourge of aquariums everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's terrible. I hope that's not what it is. But there's some indication based on his description and the pictures that it could be that. If it is, warming the tank, which is probably a good idea in this case to see if you can get rid of the ick, but warming the tank might accelerate the progress of the disease. If it's that.
So it depends on which one it is.
I'm not sure that's what it is, but just maybe compare your fish with some pictures of mycobacteriosis. You see there are all kinds of different ways it manifests. It manifests itself as patchy lesions, so that's why I'm a little worried. Sometimes it manifests itself as bloat, you know.
The pine cone
dropsy
thing.
Yeah, pine cone scales.
I hate that. It's
sometimes
so sad.
It does that. There are various things it does. Sometimes lesions just kind of pop out all over the body almost immediately, and sometimes they're very slow in development. It does all kinds of different things. But if that's what it is, that would be bad, and you need to get the fish out of the tank and separate it from others, and the prognosis is not good. So I hope that's not what it is, but let us know how it goes and if you notice any symptoms among the other fish or any change in the symptoms of this fish. And hopefully it will go well.
So if it does turn out to be mycobacterium, can he do the UV, add the UV sterilizer thing
UV
to try
sterilizers
to prevent
can
more?
Help prevent the spread of it, yeah, and okay. help you decrease the frequency of the bacteria in the water, and that could be something that could be good if that's what it is. But I would suggest doing a little research into mycobacteriosis just to see if that might be what your fish has. All right. Well, that's about all we have for this week, I think.
I think so.
So we will say to you...
May the fish...
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquaramax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquaramax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.